Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, Harold Felder, and today the topic is Jainism. To talk with me about that, I have Brian Henson. Let me give you a little bit of background about Brian. He has an undergraduate degree from East Carolina University, triple major, religious studies, anthropology, and history. He has a master's degree from Wheaton College in biblical archaeology. He's currently teaching at Charlotte Christian High School, where he's taught the Old Testament, New Testament, world religions, apologetics, and Christian theology. And he's also pursuing a Master's of Arts in Apologetics at Southern Evangelical Seminary. Welcome.
Thank you.
What have I left out?
My wife.
All right. Tell us about your wife.
I've been married for almost 6 years. My wife is now pregnant with our first child. She's from Romania. Very cute.
Yes.
She has her master's in psychology. We met at Wheaton College in graduate school.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So let's get to it. What is Jainism?
Jainism, all right? Similar to Buddhism, you have to understand the Hindu culture in which it arose. Jainism started in the 6th century BC, the exact same time that Buddhism did. We think about a generation earlier than Buddhism. Jainism actually precedes it. It was started by a man whose name is Nataputta Vardhamana, who is...
You had to practice that, didn't you?
Nataputta Vardhamana. My kids always laugh.
Say that five times fast.
Nataputta Vardhamana.
Okay.
His title is Mahavira, which means the great hero. So I'll just call him Mahavira from here on out.
Okay.
But he's the founder. He was a Hindu. He began to question the Hindu system. He questioned the caste system, just like Siddhartha the Buddha did. And he...
Explain just a little bit about the caste system.
The caste system, okay. In Hinduism, they believe that we are born, we are reincarnated over and over again because of our past sins, based on our karmic merit, our karma points, as I always call it. What you did in your past life will determine what type of life form you'll be born into, including what type of human you'll be, what class of humanity you'll be born in. If you were, you know, a good chicken, then I guess you can be born maybe into the merchant caste, or if you're a bad chicken, you'll be born into the servant caste. Okay, so he was born into the warrior caste, the warrior slash ruler caste. It's the same one, just like Siddhartha was.
Okay,
but just like the Buddha, he left his wife and child to go seek enlightenment. And the stories are so similar that some question the validity of one of them, that maybe one of them is copying the other because it's very similar. Or it could just be that that was popular in India at the time. You leave your family if you want to go selfishly seek your own salvation. That's the goal, just like in Buddhism and in Hinduism, is to stop being reborn, to get out of the cycle of reincarnation, to have your karmic merit somehow paid off so that you won't be reborn anymore, reach nirvana. Now, this religion, I think, you probably won't meet a Jain. I've never met a Jain, but I have taught a student whose last name was Jain, and I asked him if he was a Jain, and he kept telling me that he was Hindu until he asked his parents, and he realized that they were actually Jain, because a lot of Jains actually will call themselves Hindus, because they still will worship Hindu gods, okay?
Where is this religion?
It's in India. There's only between 3 to 5 million Jains in the world.
Okay.
Whereas, in Hinduism, there's 700 plus million, 360 million Buddhists. So Jainism is pretty small. But the reason why I think it's significant is because we will see what extent mankind will go to try to get rid of his sin.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mahavira. The Jains have tried more than any religion that I've studied to try to actually stop sin. And if they can't do it with the incredible practices that these guys have, it is not going to be done. Okay? That was his goal. He believed that the problem is not that we're trying to go back to Brahman like the Hindus believe, that everything is made up of Brahman and that we have to become one with Brahman to stop reincarnation. He didn't believe the problem is desire like the Buddha thought, that we have to get rid of desire. He believed, which I think actually his system made more sense, Mahavira, he believed that karma is the problem. our karma points, our merit that we're building up. If we can stop sinning, okay, that's all you got to do is stop sinning. All right? Okay. You with me here? Just stop sinning. Right. That's all you got to do. And then if we can actually help karma out and punish ourselves, then we can reverse the process and eventually get rid of all of our karmic merit. Now think about it. If karma is like a law. It's like a natural law. You know, how does it know? Well, if I drop this book on the table, how does gravity know to pull it back down? How does it know? They would say that karma is like that. It's an impersonal law. It's a moral law that governs everything. And it just knows what body to put me in. It just throws me there. Okay? But what if I stopped sinning? And what if I helped karma out and I started punishing myself? And I helped karma punish all of my sins? What would I be reborn as if I have no sins?
Good question.
Yeah. And so he thought, that's it. If I can punish all my sins, I won't be reborn. That's how you escape the system of life, death, and rebirth. Oh, and wow. See, as Christians, you know, we believe that we want eternal life. We want to keep living. But in Eastern religions, the goal is to stop life. So he thought, if I can get rid of all my sins, then when I die, I will reach nirvana. Now, he believed that we do have a soul, unlike the Buddha did not believe that. He believed that we have a soul and that we are attached to matter. And that if I, depending on my sins, my soul leaves my body and is attached to another body. So he was dualistic. He believed that there's the universe is made up of matter and soul. But my individual soul is eternal. Now, when he was asked, just like the Buddha, when he was asked, when Mahavira was asked, well, where did our bodies come from? How did it all start? He said, I don't know. Don't care. It doesn't matter. Only thing that matters is that we stop being reborn. Okay? And so he believed that if we can get rid of all of our karma points, that my soul will not be put into another body, but it will just float up to the top of the universe where I will then experience nirvana. Okay? Now, here's how he does it. He goes out and he immediately decides he's going to starve himself, just like Siddhartha. See, Siddhartha actually...
was Buddha.
The Buddha was a lot like Mahavira in the beginning, and then he decided, this is too hard. I'm tired of eating feces and one grain of rice a day, which is what the Buddha did, and he decided, you know, it's got to be another system. I'll just say I don't desire things anymore. Whereas Mahavira said, mm-mm. He stopped talking for 12 years. It took him, according to legend. He didn't talk for 12 years. He immediately took off all of his clothes, walked around everywhere naked.
Okay. What was the purpose of that?
He made himself poor. See, if karma can actually make you poor, if that's what it does, if being poor in the lower class, if that's your karma, then what if I make myself poor? I'm actually helping karma out. I'm punishing myself. Okay? And so he makes himself poor. He would whip himself to get rid of his points. He would sleep outside in extreme temperatures. Like he would lay out, the Jains today are still known for doing this. They will, now this is Jain monks, I should say. The average Jain is not doing this, but the Jain monks are still following his teachings. And he would lay outside in the sun and just let the sun burn him. And Jains today will do this. They'll lay out in the sun and get burned. If you ever get a really bad sunburn, you lay out there. And then the next day, you don't go lay out and try to get a tan.
No. he
would lay out and get burned, and then the next day go out again, 8 hours. Next day go out again until he would get second degree burns. Bubbles would just pop up on his body because he would burn himself so bad. He decided that he would not kill anything. Another thing that Jains believe is that to kill anything is a sin. If I step on a cricket, I just murdered that cricket. If I go take a flower and pull it up, I just killed that flower. And so he decided he would not kill anything. He was known for covering his face with a veil, and he would sweep the sidewalk as he would walk to make sure all the bugs were taken out of the way. He didn't want bugs to fly in his mouth. That's why he had the veil. So here's this naked guy with his whip and his veil and his broom, you know. That's all he has. And the only way he would eat would be he would go to a trash dump and he would eat discarded vegetation that people had already eaten because he didn't want to be the cause of its death. Okay. Now, according to legend, there are people who would sick their dogs on him and he would just let the dogs bite him because he's losing points. If the dog is biting you, he's hurting you, you're suffering, you're losing karma points. Okay? He would let other bugs feed off his body, just feast on him. There's another story where some skeptics were watching him and wondering if he was really legit. So they come up to him and they set him on fire. They started burning him. And he lets him do that because he's losing points. Okay? I had a professor at ECU who went to India to study Hinduism and Jainism, and he said that one of the most disturbing sights that he ever saw in his life was he saw this group of Jains, no clothes on. They would take themselves and throw themselves into these thorn bushes, and then they would pry their bodies out, and then when they were finished, they would go throw themselves back in again, because by doing this, they are deleting their sin points. They're getting rid of their karma. They're punishing themselves. They're trying to atone for their own sin. And there are, there are Jains that are actually known for staring at the sun until they go blind. They stare at the sun and it burns their eyes, and then they stop and they look at it again, and then it burns their eyes, and they keep doing it until they go blind, because that deletes karmic merit. So here we have guys who are obsessed with getting rid of sin. An entire religion that is dedicated to punishing themselves to being Christ. Yeah. They're trying to be their own Christ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
At the end of after 12 years, Mahavira said that he thought that he had reached enlightenment, because he claimed that he had knowledge of his past lives, and he had some kind of a super knowledge, which is in Jainism, that's how you know that you've been enlightened. And then he then began speaking again, and he taught for 30 more years other people how to discipline yourself so that you stop the inflow of karma points, and then how to punish yourself so that you begin to reverse the process until they're gone. And at the end of his life, he starved himself to death. And this is supposed to be tradition in Jainism, that once you have actually deleted all of your points, okay, then you starve yourself to death.
What do the average Jain do? I mean, I'm sure that all Jains or people who are followers of Jainism aren't doing this type of stuff. The average Jain that you meet, how would I know that they're a Jain?
Right. Well, most Jains, the laity, they support the monks. They get married. A monk will not get married because it is supposed to be a sin to have sex, a sin to think about sex, to have the feelings, the urges. And so if you are going to have a family, you will not reach nirvana. And Mahavira said that most people will never reach nirvana. They're just going to keep being reincarnated for eternity. Okay. And so the average Jain is not trying to get rid of their karmic merit. Okay, and what they're doing is they're just trying to stop as much inflow as they can to hope for a better reincarnation in their next life. So now the Jains are known for, like I said earlier, not killing anything at all. I mean, not killing anything, bugs or anything. And so Jains refuse to be farmers because, you know, you're chopping up worms when you're planting anything. And so Jains are known for being businessmen, for being accountants, for being bankers. And so ironically, this religion that is supposed to thrive in poverty, the laity is actually known for being very wealthy in India. Because, yeah. Now, they do not believe that they're going to reach nirvana. The laity does not. Because they know that they're not, beating their sin points out. And so if you meet a Jain and say, well, do you stare at the sun and beat yourself with a stick? Then they'll probably say, no, but I've heard that that's what the monks do.
Why is it wrong to kill insects? I guess I'm just having a problem with that.
Well, I think you and I would agree. It's wrong to kill grandma, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We just disagree over who grandma is.
Okay.
They'd say, well, that cricket, that could be grandma.
Yeah.
And so if you go kill it, you have just, there's no difference. Because if you believe that you could be reincarnated into a cow, okay, if you really believe that, then when you go kill a cow, you could be killing a former human.
Yeah.
And so you begin to view it as though you're on the same level.
Yeah.
Okay. And this kind of Eastern influence that has come into our country is we see this with PETA, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. And so
this is what I try to tell people, is that your worldview has consequences on the way you live out your life. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is a prime example because of what they believe humans are, what they aren't, provokes them to live out this life that is completely against what we as Christians believe.
Right. What you believe determines how you behave.
Yeah. So one of the things I want to do now is I want to contrast Jainism and Christianity and the areas of main beliefs so that people can get a clear understanding of how they differ. So let's take the first one, God. What is the difference in the view of a Jain of who God is as compared to a Christian?
Okay. Similar to Buddhism, Jains do not believe that gods are necessary. Gods are pointless. The concept of there being an ultimate, high, infinite God, not in Jainism, completely gone. Okay. Same thing with Buddhism. It's just like it's like an angel. Gods are basically like an angel. You can pray to them. In fact, a lot of Jains will pray to Hindu gods because they're living in India. They're surrounded by Hindus. And they believe that, gods are in the same predicament that we're in. I mean, they haven't reached nirvana either. And so that's what they need to do somehow also. Okay, so the gods aren't really there for anything. But the average Jain does pray to gods just because if you have a son or a daughter or a friend or any loved one who is sick and in the hospital, in reality, you're going to want to pray to a higher power to free them.
Yeah, you know? Someone that can help you out.
Right. And ultimately, even though Mahavira didn't believe that, you could pray to anyone to help you, eventually he's going to become a saint and he will be prayed to and people will turn to him looking for comfort and for help to try to reach nirvana.
That's pretty ironic.
Yeah, it is. Same thing with Siddhartha, the Buddha. And also, both Jainism and Buddhism did this, that because Jainism and Buddhism both started in the 6th century B.C., nobody's going to simply believe that your religion, brand new on the scene, that it's the true religion, unless you make it seem like it's older. And so the Buddhist said, Siddhartha was actually the 7th Buddha to come. Mm. There are other ones that came before him. And the Jains said, Mahavira was actually the 24th conqueror to come. Okay, the word Jain means conqueror. Okay. He's actually the 24th. They call them the Tirthankaras, the 24th Tirthankaras, the saints. The Mahavira was the 24th Tirthankara. Okay, so you can pray to these Tirthankaras. They're humans who have reached sainthood by getting rid of all their karma points. Okay, so it's man is designed for a higher power. We are designed to worship a higher power. If he's not there, we'll create him.
You probably already touched on, but I still want to ask you to clarify on them. Man, what about the original state of man, the spiritual condition? Where did he come from?
He doesn't know.
Yeah,
he does not answer that question. We are born into sin. Really, that's every religion kind of has this idea that sin is a problem. That's what karma is. We are born with this sin that I inherited from my former life. Now, why would they think that you inherit sin? Because, when we're born, we all keep sinning. Everyone does it. And Mahavira tried to, beat himself until he stopped. Only mythological creatures, only mythological figures have actually stopped sin. Hmm. You can't find anybody who stopped sin. Hmm. And so they had to create all these other past characters who supposedly did. And what I think is interesting is the Jains try so hard to get rid of their sin. They throw themselves into the thorn bushes. They don't realize that somebody actually did come and take their thorns for them.
Yeah.
They did wear their thorns and was pierced on their behalf and was beaten on their behalf and did take their sins away. And I think that if they knew that, just think about how liberating that would be.
Yeah.
If somebody said, you don't have to do this to yourself anymore because there is a being who has come to take your suffering away. And he suffered on your behalf. And you can continue to live, not in this world of suffering that you're trying to get out of, but in an eternal life in heaven.
That brings me to my next question. I know the founder of Jainism lived before Jesus' time. Mm-hmm. But what would the average Jain follower say to you today about Jesus, who he is?
He's nobody important. He didn't do anything to show that he had reached enlightenment. He's just not part of their in Eastern religions in general, except for in Hinduism, Jesus doesn't really have a role.
So he couldn't be redeemer for us because, obviously not, because you can be your own redeemer.
You can you're your own Christ. You sacrifice yourself. You crucify yourself, essentially.
Yeah. So salvation, there's really no such thing as salvation except for
It's works-based, big time. I mean, I guess you could call it an atonement system because you're your own sacrifice. You're your own high priest who offers yourself up, but not to a God. See, that there's not a personal being that you've sinned against, which then you have to call into question, well, that doesn't make sense. Because how can you have a moral law without a moral lawgiver?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Morals don't make sense outside of a relationship. Like, you can't commit adultery against a rock or murder a rock. It only makes sense if you have personal, relational beings. Only then does a moral law make sense. So how could there be this moral law of karma unless it was given by a moral lawgiver? It seems that there had to have been a person to come up with these laws.
They have no real knowledge, of course, if you said, of heaven and hell.
Right.
What do they think about the Bible?
I mean, you know, what's the Bible? If they've heard of it, it's nothing. It's not important.
Well, then what?
It's not inspired.
What scriptures do they use to support their position?
Their scriptures are called the Agamas. They are range from 33 books to 84 books, depending on which Jain sect that you're in. They don't have a lot of different sects. They only have a couple. I think it's pretty hard to get a lot of converts. You pretty much have to just think that Jainism is true. You know, that's why, and following the family tradition. But their holy scriptures are, their scriptures were written 1,000 years after Mahavira's life.
Yeah.
You know, oral tradition was passed on for 1,000 years. So think about this. Here you have scriptures that were not written by a god, or not inspired, okay? Not inspired scriptures from a deity. And they're not even written down until 1,000 years later. Contrast that with scripture, which was written by the prophets during that time period, confirmed by miracles, rooted in history.
By the eyewitnesses.
By the eyewitnesses.
And that is one of the things that people just don't seem to get, because, like we're talking about, in the New Testament, we have people who actually witnessed the events.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no time for legend to creep in.
Right.
Because the people who they were writing about were still alive.
Yeah,
so you don't make up stories about someone who's still alive. Whereas when you have these oral traditions that go on in like hundreds and hundreds of years, you don't know what that
is. Yeah, the telephone
game. If
that
has any connection whatsoever to truth. Like you were talking about Buddha. I think the earliest writings were 500 years after his death.
400, right.
And I've read some of the stuff in the Buddha's, you know, literature, and there were things about, like, dragons, and there are these mythical creatures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much credence can you give to that?
Yeah. I know, which is very different from Scripture, because it's not only that. We also have historical documents outside of Scripture.
Yeah.
Like Flavius Josephus and Tacitus that are actually confirming, saying, yes, there are these people who are claiming that Jesus really did rise from the dead.
Yeah.
You know? There's no time for the telephone game.
Yeah.
But you have plenty of time when you wait 1,000 years to actually write your scriptures down.
So the average Jain, how do they support their beliefs?
How do they support it? Well, they believe it's true existentially. Just like in Buddhism, that it's true because it speaks to me. I believe it's true. In reality, it's probably because it's tradition. It's come down, you know, through the centuries. Our family is Jain. If you ask them to defend their faith, that's not something that they're really trying to. In fact, you've heard the famous story of all these blind men who are touching the elephant.
Yeah.
That's actually a Jain story. A Jain allegory. The Jains actually came up with that. But they say that one man's touching the ear of the elephant and says, you know, they're all blind men, and says, you know, it's a leaf. God is a leaf. One touch, or truth is a leaf. I'm touching the trunk. It's, you know, reality is a snake or whatever. Yeah. In reality, it's an elephant.
Yeah.
You know, they're all wrong.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work.
That's supposed to prove that you know,
all religions are true.
It all depends on, you know, your perspective when it actually proves the exact
opposite. Yeah, truth depends on your perspective. Yeah, but they're all wrong because it's an elephant.
Evaluate Jainism as a whole.
As a whole, I would say just like Buddhism, it doesn't speak to the heart of man. And so they have created their other beings to worship. They need a higher power. And so that they've, when you have to mooch off of local religions or another religion, your religion isn't standing on its own.
Yeah.
You know, and then you still have the problem with reincarnation. When did it begin? If you can't, you know, how do you know? Where's the authority? How do you know? Where's the spiritual insight to know that there is no higher power, that there is, that we are a soul that is connected to matter?
Brian Henson, that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks a lot for being on the show.
All right, thank you.
That ends this episode of Giving an Answer. Be sure to join me again next time. And until then, goodbye and God bless.
This is Harold Felder here again, the host of Giving an Answer. I want to also tell you about the Journey Church of Charlotte, where I co-pastor. The church was started by a vision given to my co-pastor, Mark Griffith, and I'll let Mark Griffith tell a little bit about that vision.
Well, the vision of the Journey is essentially, in a nutshell, that churches in the Bible, particularly the church at Antioch, reflected the community around it. If you look at the leadership of that church and who was there, there was everybody from the community. And one of the disappointing things about churches is that often that's not the case, that there is not a reflection in the church of the community. And so we purposely built the Journey with the idea of reaching out to the community right around us so that the Journey would look like the community of East Charlotte, which is very racially and ethnically diverse.
So the Journey Church is a place where you could come to experience a multicultural, multi-ethnic, and also a place of sound doctrine. I'm making sure of that. So come on out. The address is 4419B Monroe Road, Charlotte, North Carolina. Phone number is 704-264-9922, and we look forward to seeing you. The preceding show has been sponsored by Giving an Answer with Harold Felder. If you would like to hear this broadcast in its entirety, you can order a CD of today's show or a DVD of the studio recording for a donation of any amount to Giving an Answer. You can call us at 704-248-7840. You can also contact us via mail at Giving an Answer, P.O. Box 1972, Matthews, North Carolina 28106, or on the web at givinganswer.org. That phone number again is 704-248-7840. And remember, this show will only stay on the air by your prayers and financial support. Be sure to join me again next time on Giving an Answer, and until then, goodbye and God bless.